Welcome to the Death Care Marketing Show.
Most funeral homes worry about saying the wrong thing, so they end up sounding like every other funeral home. The problem with that? Families aren't looking for perfect. They're looking for someone they can trust. Today, we're talking about authentic communication and why it may be the most overlooked marketing strategy in funeral service. My guest today is Sherry Dunleavy, a former television journalist, grief literacy expert, speaker, coach, and author. Sherry has spent years helping people find the confidence that navigates life's hardest conversations. And today, she's helping us answer a question every funeral professional faces. How do we communicate in a way that builds trust instead of just delivering information? Because the way your funeral home communicates becomes the way your community remembers you. Stay tuned for a great show. Hi, I'm Mary Barnett, and this is the Death Care Marketing Show. We talk real funeral home marketing, strategy, automation, compassion, without the fluff. I've got 35 years of marketing experience, and I'm bringing you death care thought leaders to share what works, what doesn't, and what's worth doing now. So let's get into it. This show's title is Stop Talking Like a Funeral Home, How Authentic Communication Builds Trust Before Families Need You. And my guest today is Sherry Dunleavy, a former television journalist turned grief literacy expert, speaker, coach, and author. Through her work at Graduating Grief, Sherry helps people become more confident having life's hardest conversations. And while today's topic is communication, this isn't just about what to say after someone dies. It's about how every conversation, every email, every video, every community presentation, and every interaction becomes part of your funeral home's marketing. So Sherry, without further ado, welcome to the show.
Mary, hi. Thank you.
You are so welcome. I'm sorry if you're hearing hammering in the background. We're just going to carry through, but this is life, right? Things happen, right. Especially in the funeral home business, right? Things happen and we adjust, and you are an expert at learning how to adjust. In fact, I like to start out every show with asking people's story, because no one accidentally ends up in this kind of work. So can you tell us about your journey and why you are in this space and why you're doing what you do?
Well, I was a television news anchor for 16 years. And during that time, my audience got to see me fall in love and get married and have my first son, and followed my pregnancy. And then I got pregnant with my second son, and we had some complications. And it was a high risk pregnancy. And so I had to go on leave early. And so they followed our journey, and our son Brandon was born. He had something called a diaphragmatic hernia, and he did not make it. He lived 29 days. And I kind of was thrust into this. I always tell people, this club that no one wants to be a member of. But then once you find other members, you're so grateful because they help you through. It's wonderful.
Exactly.
But, you know, at the same time,
and again, before we go on publicly, like, I'm so sorry for your loss. Like, I can't imagine losing a child. Like, wow. And the fact that you've turned this mess into your message, and what you're doing, but I know God puts things in our life that's going to bless others, and you're using your gift. So bravo. Anyways, keep going.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Yeah, I always tell people, you know, there's a difference between a good idea and a calling, because when it's a calling, God never stops. And right. That's what my book was. My book was a calling. So we lost our son, Brandon. And like I said, we were loved through this and lifted up by so many people and so many people we didn't expect. But then there were those people that we did expect, right? Like, one of my best friends, and just didn't show up. My husband, two of his best friends, we never heard from them again after this happened. And so my best friend, I thought she was going to tell me she was going to come up and help me and just hold me and be there with me, right? And instead she said, I'm sorry, I just can't do this. So that was like, compounded loss, because you've just lost one of your closest friends and your son, you know.
Oh my God.
So abandoned. And But then 6 years later, she called me back and just kind of wanted to pick up. I always say not where we left off, but kind of like before any of this all happened. And it,
right.
While I was cordial, it just wasn't possible, right? Like, no, how could you not even ask me how I've been doing through this time, like since you weren't there?
Right. I always say, made a conscious choice, you know, just to say goodbye. Like, she wasn't like she just ghosted you, because then maybe you thought maybe she was, you know, trapped under something heavy. Right. But the fact that she said, I can't do this with you.
Yeah.
Wow. That showed her character right there. So that's a huge loss.
So, yeah, it was devastating to me. But then after that phone call 6 years later, that's when I got the calling, because I always say God made me curious instead of furious, because in my ego mind, yes, you have every right to be furious with that. But I was curious. It's like, wow, what was that about? And why do people abandon other people? And I was thinking about that. And I found myself going into bookstores and going on Amazon and Googling. And then I got this message, clear as day, that said, if you want this message out, you're going to have to be the one to write it. And I thought, well, I'm not an author. Like, that's no. But that message just kept coming back. That's the calling, right? And then I realized after the fact, I just obeyed the calling. And that's how my book, How Can I Help, came out. And it's a go-to guide.
I see it right behind you.
Yeah. It's a go-to guide for helping loved ones through life's difficulties. And basically, it's what to do and what to say to people who are dealing with grave trauma, loss in their life, when you're either too afraid, or you're afraid you're going to say it wrong, or you have no idea what to do. And so, you know, I didn't come from an expert's point of view, because, you know, to me, I'm just a mom who lost a child, but I was a reporter. And so I interviewed so many people from so many walks of life. And I asked them specifically, what did your friends and your family do that helped you the most? And then what were some of those things that weren't so helpful? Because my intention was with this was, I don't want anybody else to have double compounded losses too. If it's simply because you're too afraid, now there's a book. Now there's something out there to help you. If you seriously don't know what to do, or you're afraid you're going to say or do the wrong thing, now there's a book that can help you, because people, when they're going through death and loss and divorce and all those kinds of things in life that can be so traumatic, this is when they need their friends and family the most. This is not when you step back.
No. In fact, that kind of ties into this conversation that we're having today, because obviously this show is for funeral homeowners that are looking for ways to streamline their business or grow their business or somehow make sure that they're taking care of their families. So I've looked at hundreds of funeral home websites over the years, and honestly, many of them really do the same. So why do you think funeral professions struggle to communicate in a way that feels genuine, based on your experience, not only as a TV journalist, but someone on the other side of the table who's been dealing with grief herself? Like, what do you wish they could say to you when they're helping people through these stages?
I have been blessed. When my father passed away a few years ago, blessed with a wonderful funeral professional that just took such good care of my mother and took such good care of us. In fact, she went to work for them as a greeter after that.
Wow.
But they were like, we have your back. You don't have to go through this alone. Mm. And I'm going to say something that I think it's because they stop at the moment the body has been delivered to the cemetery. And I think it needs to continue. I think that,
yes,
you know, the aftercare is so important. And I think this is where a lot of people drop the ball, whether it's grief support or whether it's doing something in your community to make sure that these people know that they still matter and their loved ones still matter, and that they don't have to do this alone. So I don't know. Like, I know that a lot of people can't do grief support groups, but you could at least on your website have resources available so that people have this, you know,
Right.
Have it in a packet. I was just doing a talk in Erie, Pennsylvania, and the most beautiful story, there was a 83-year-old retired funeral director, female, and she told me that when she was taking, when she was in charge of the funeral home, all those papers and death certificates, she would go 4 weeks, 6 weeks after, and she would personally make a home visit. And she said that always she was invited in, always people wanted to talk, always people needed to make that connection. And she said, and you know, family members took it over when I retired, and they just hand all the stuff to the people when they come to pick up, you know, the flowers, the blankets, the whatever. And she said, you've inspired me to go back and say, put me to work. This is what I want to do. I want to go back into the homes and meet with people. They need this and I need this. So it's that power of human connection.
Yeah. Actually, that's what I'm saying. You know, how do we sound more human? How do we do that? You just said it. Like, that was my next question. Like, people need that human connection now more than ever. I think we're so distracted and with so much noise, we're so distracted with the screens always in front of us. And I think that we've lost that eye to eye, that hug, that, you know, I think the world is ready to turn around, right? And go back, turn a little more analog than digital, because they need that. So having those community events, having the aftercare, where I love that idea of actually taking the time, and people are so busy, so it's hard to do that. But if you could, you know, determine one day a week where you're just going to make a couple house calls, I think that's lovely. I think that would be so beautiful. I've lost a lot of people in my life and no one has ever done that.
That when she said that to me, I almost started crying, because I thought, oh my gosh, yes, this is what we need. You know, we're in a society where we went from high touch. You're in a high touch industry, right? The death care industry is high touch. It used to be, but now everything's become high tech. And so it's just easier to text or send an email instead of picking up the phone and calling someone or knocking on the door and making an appointment and being with them. Everyone thinks it's so much more efficient, but it leaves us deficient, I believe. You know,
right.
I think that there's something your soul is missing. As a human being, we need that. We crave that. Right. And it's intensified when we're grieving.
100%. Yeah. I mean, that's why I think, as you mentioned before, that this industry is really a calling. Like, it's not an easy life, and you choose the life of being a funeral home owner, director, arranger. You carry that with you. And so you have everyone's grief kind of on you, and you have to find ways of taking balance. In fact, that's where we met. You were a speaker at the California Funeral Directors Association event. Like, you're a headliner. And I was so impressed. I was saying this before we started the show, with how you were giving them tools to help them deal with the stress that comes by dealing with people's death every day. And so, you know, I always tell, like, my funeral home, like, you guys are doing sacred work. I'm so grateful for you. But you kind of touched on this before about something they could do. That was one of my questions to you. Like, why do you think funeral professionals struggle to communicate in a way that feels genuine? Are they afraid of saying something wrong, do you think?
Sometimes, you know, and this, we need to be better. I think we need to improve our communication skills, but then we need to mix that with compassion, right? Mm. And so how can we be compassionate? I think that we can, how do I want to say this? Well, because you're running a business, you know, and then there's this thought of don't bring your personal life to work. Well, I mean, people are bringing you their most vulnerable point, coming to you at their most vulnerable point of their life, right?
Yes.
And so you can't just put up this window and go, well, this is what you're not a robot. Now, you may be afraid. You don't know what to do. You don't know what to say. Or it may be that you've been in it for so long that it starts sounding robotic, or it just starts sounding the same way. So that's where empathy comes in. Sometimes empathy, you know, you realize it when you've lived it. Okay. Mm-hmm. But if you've not, and we've got a lot of young funeral directors that never have experienced loss, right? So they only know so much. They can only know so much. But if you can put yourself in their shoes, empathy is putting yourself in their shoes. What would you do if you were in their situation? Understand that they're afraid. Understand, you know. And so in order to do that, it's not so important as to what you say. It's more important as to how you listen to them.
Ooh, that's okay. Good.
Because people need to process their story. They need to process this. That's part of the grief process, right? So it's presence. It's active listening. It's putting your phone away. It's, you know, not checking your text on your watch. It's not looking around, you know, to see if there's something else to do. It's literally sitting there leaning in. Human touch, human connection, putting yourself in their shoes and trying to understand what you, how you would feel if you were going through what they're talking to you about.
Right. I love that. Actually, that ties right into the next segment. I always give a framework in the show so people can actually take these ideas and put them into action. And today's framework was heard, which is interesting that you said they have to be an active listener. Because they need to really hear what their not only their current clients, but their prospective clients are going through. And HEARD stands for H is hear before you help. E, empathize, connection before correction. A, avoiding cliches. So trade predictable phrases for authentic presence. R is respond like a human, less corporate, more conversational. Like people just want sometimes to talk about their loved one. By asking them, tell me about them. Like, what was their favorite thing to do? And on the weekend, you know, that would be something. D is for don't disappear, because communication continues after the funeral, like you mentioned before. And on that last one, on don't disappear, what letter of all these do you think people, the funeral home, struggle with the most? Do you think the disappear one would be the most? Because obviously they stop the ball after they deliver all the final effects. Or do you think they have a hard time listening?
I think it could be a combination of both. And if you're a busy funeral home, people just come in, you know, there's not enough downtime in between clients sometimes or families. Right. So that could be an issue, but I think it's the hard stop, because what happens is the person can get along and get through it pretty well when they have their team with them, when they have their family, when they have their friends, when they have their funeral professional, their pastor or their priest, you know, their church family there with them. But eventually everyone's going to go home.
Yes.
And then they're alone sitting in that. And that's when they need, and usually like that's when I reach out to a lot of my family and friends. I wait, you know, like I'll do an initial outreach, but it's, you know, 2 months, 3 months after, 6 months after, just to check in and see how they're doing. Little touchstones, right?
Yeah.
Right. It's important.
Right. And not just touching them to sell them something else, right? It's not like, hey, you know, your dad died, it's time to plan your funeral, you know, your pre-plan, whatever. No, it's actually like inviting them to a healing event or, you know, something that they can get value out of, a conversation, a workshop where you're working through. We did a recent workshop, again, at a local funeral home, and there was this gentleman, and I use him as an example a lot. So if you're listening to other podcasts, you might've heard this story. He was an army man and a doctor, but he was retired. And I say that because he was all obviously into precision. And so he came into this workshop with a notepad and he was scribbling notes. And when it was time for question and answer, he said, okay, so I've been through the five stages of grief. When is this over? And the funeral, the grief counselor was like, what do you mean? And he's like, I want to check it off. And it keeps coming back. What's up with that? Like, I need this to be over. I've got a line. And she goes, sir, I'm sorry that someone told you that grief is linear, but it's not. It's circular.
Is
the term.
Yeah.
Thank you. I don't know why that didn't sound right to me. And it does. It comes in these grief waves. And I, being aware of that as a funeral home owner, again, we're speaking to funeral home staff, think about that. Like when the wave hits, and especially if you've been through it yourself, you know that. Mm-hmm. But it's being there, like you said, for your families, offering comforting communication. And I love your idea of taking the time or having someone in your funeral home be responsible for making home visits. Like, remember the old house call for doctors?
I mean, right.
A little before my time, but still, it's like, I remember then in Little House on the Prairie, mm-hmm. they had the doctor came a calling. And I think that's a beautiful idea, Sherry. Thank you for that. So this section is called the tri-list checklist, if I could speak. So let's make some of this practical for our funeral homeowners. If someone wanted their funeral home to sound more authentic tomorrow, what's the first thing you think they should rewrite on their website? Is there, like, in your communication with being a journalist, is there something you think that maybe it's not on their website, maybe it's in their emails? Is there some kind of messaging that makes them more authentic? Is it just like coming from their own story, or do you have any insights into that?
It could be. I mean, I like to hear why you're doing what you're doing and why it's important for you to do what you do. I also think it's important for people to know that we know you're at your most vulnerable state and we're here to help you through that, right? I want to know that I'm going to be, you know, cared for and cared about.
Yes.
You know,
so projecting that message of that we're here to, because we care about you. We wouldn't have gotten in this business, so to speak, without doing that. Tell me more about your book, because it keeps staring at me behind you. How can I help? Because this is obviously a tool that funeral homeowners can use, right? To help them in their communications.
It can help. It can help anyone. And it's a very easy read. It's very quick. And it has, you know, a lot of people's stories in it. But then at the end of every chapter, it just really has a list that just do one of these things. And this will show the person that you love and care about that you care, right? And that they're important. They're important to you. But like I said, the whole intent behind this is that we can all use this, because it's so funny. One of the things that I share in the book is this thing that everybody says. Like, I'll when I'm doing my talks, I'll say, raise your hand if you've ever said this. Mary, if there's anything that I can do, please let me know. Who's ever said that, right? Like, everybody has said that.
Guilty.
I always say that in the book, I have what's helpful and what's not so helpful. I don't say right and wrong, because I would rather someone step out awkwardly in the right in love.
With my heart,
in love, than awkwardly in love, than hold back in fear.
Right. Oh, I love that.
And I'll give awkwardly you an example of this.
Yes.
When my son died, he was very swollen. His skin was splitting, and I did not want to have a viewing.
No.
So the viewing was private, but they did not tell me that they could remove that fluid and that he could be returned to his beautiful body again. I did not know that, but I did not have a viewing.
Okay.
But I did have a funeral. So we're coming out of the church, getting ready to go to the cemetery. And a young reporter who didn't, you know, I'm sure this was his first ever encounter with death. He comes up to me as I'm getting ready to get into the limo to go to the cemetery. And he hands me a potted plant, because somewhere he knew you sent flowers or something. It was the most awkward thing in the world.
Yeah.
But I
felt
kind
of him.
Oh my gosh. Look what he did. Like, I'm still talking about this 26 years later, right? And my heart expands. And I felt I feel the love from what he did.
Yeah.
And yet I have those other friends who didn't do anything, right?
Right.
And so I always say, oh my gosh, do it awkwardly, but don't just not do it at all.
Right. I love that. Do it awkwardly in love versus what was the thing about fear you said?
Step out in love. It's what I, how I sign all my books, step out in love. But the whole reason I say, you know, what's not so helpful is, you know, if there's anything I can do, please let me know. That automatically puts another burden on the person who's grieving or who's
hurting. That's like, a great way of thinking about it.
Yeah. I had this one girlfriend that said, oh, me and the people at work, we just want to do something so special for your family. Just tell us what we could do. And I'm thinking, I don't even know what day it are. You can't, I can't tell you. I have no idea. No. And so consequently, they never did anything. Not that I expected them to, but I just did not have the bandwidth, nor would I ever tell somebody, oh, here's what you can do for us. And neither would anybody else. But, but I will tell you that I was giving this talk once. I was doing a training, for caregivers in a senior community. And one lady said that her aunt said this to her. And she said, and there was one day, honey, if there's anything I can do, you just call me and I will be right there. Well, her car broke down and she needed a ride to work. And so she remembered her aunt saying that. And her aunt said, when she called her and said, I need a ride to work, my car broke down. And her aunt said, do you know what time it is? And she said, no. She goes, Price is Right is on. You know I don't leave my house when Price is Right is on. You're going to have to find another ride somewhere else. And she said she never talked to her aunt again. So they may ask you, right? And so what I found is that people aren't going to ask you. But if they do ask you, are you going to be willing to do it? Okay. Because that disintegrated that relationship, right? And that grieving people truly feel that that's just something people say so they can say something nice, but they really have no intention of doing anything anyhow. So better way.
Check it off their list.
Yeah. A better way to do that is to
tell us.
Give them three options of things that you're willing to do. Okay. So do you need food? You know, can I do some laundry?
Deliver
for
a casserole.
Yeah. Can I watch the kids? Can I pick up the kids after school and take them to a movie? Right. Three things you're willing to do. So I'll never go and offer to clean someone's house. Okay.
Right. By the way, I interrupted. There was a little bit of a delay. What were the three things you said? Can I bring you a meal? What was the second thing you said?
Oh, well, they can be anything. These are just all suggestions in my book, but just offer three things that you're willing to do. That you're willing to do for them. Not things
Yeah. What I was saying is, you said it takes the burden off of the person to think of something. And then they know in their head, oh, these are three things that if I need it, I can call them. Then there won't be any awkwardness because they've already offered to do that, right? I love that, Sherry.
Yeah.
So helpful.
The whole point behind that, Mary, is still to this day, I'll catch those words starting to come out of my mouth. And I'm like, you wrote this book. So, you know, these are things that to practice, and you practice and, you know, till you get better. And I'm a lot better at it now. But I just know that people see this as insincere. They may ask you for something that you're not willing to do for them. And then what are you going to do? Or they're not going to ever ask anything.
Right. So true. Is there anything that you, So we typically, so in the show, we have something called the good, the bad, and the ugly. And so this actually is a good transition to that, because I think sometimes we don't, like you said, it's not right or wrong, right? It's just some are better than others. So let me just read what they are and then we can go in any order. So good is, what's one communication habit every funeral home should adopt? Something they were going to say. The ugly is, what is a communication mistake family member for years? That's something maybe a funeral home has said that back that truck up. Or ugly, what's a communication mistake I'm so sorry. That was the ugly, is what a communication they would remember for years. But the bad was, what's a well-intentioned phrase that often falls flat, which I think you just said. Is there anything, right. Let me know if I can do anything to help. So that definitely. Right. But is there something that a funeral home specifically, I mean, obviously interpersonal, we were talking about that, like what a friend can say, a family member. But is there anything that a funeral home could say that you think would make a big difference in how they are perceived by their families? Like you just said, can we come visit in your home would be phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you think a funeral staff could say?
Well, you know, I think that they could say, you know, this is art where you don't have to go through this alone. And would it be all right if we check on you from time to time just to make sure you're doing okay? Could we leave you with a list of services that are available in the community in case you feel that you need help?
Ooh, you know, I love that. Yes.
This is, and then I think, you know, one of the things that I love doing is I love going into communities where funeral homes will have me come in right at the holidays when people are afraid of what's the holiday going to be like, what's Thanksgiving, what's Christmas going to be like, what's New Year's going to be like without my loved one this year. Everything has changed. You build up all these stories in your head. And so I have a workshop on how to navigate the holidays and get those ruminating thoughts out of your mind and you know, go through some exercises with people and give them ways to, you know, recreate the holidays and how to incorporate their loved one still into the holidays, even though it's going to be different. You know, there are things that we can do to help people that don't take a lot. Just take a little bit of thought. But
that is lovely.
Here's the bottom line.
Okay.
If you treat people like you have their back, that you care about them, that and they are important to you, they're going to tell all their family and friends how wonderful you were. But if you treat them like a number, they're going to tell everybody else, right?
Exactly.
Impersonal it was. And so this can either be the best marketing tool or it can be the worst.
Right. So true. Something that wasn't on the agenda today, but I was just thinking about the impact that your talk at the California Funeral Homes Association meeting was. Because we're speaking to funeral homeowners, I think some of the techniques that you were giving was such a blessing to them. Is there one thing that you can share that would maybe help relieve some of the burden that is on? Because again, we're talking about communication here today, and it seems like there's so much pressure on them to say the right thing or not say the right, you know, right, you know, the better thing. And that's a lot, right? Besides doing all the paperwork and the arrangements and, you know, there, is there something, I remember I loved your breathing technique, but you also had some reframing that you gave. And so since, like I said, we have funeral home people listening, can you share something that, again, they're coming into the holiday season, they're going to need to have some of those tools. And again, you're for hire. Like you can come out and do this in person. I love your idea of hiring you to come do the holiday to help the families with that. But is there something that you can share really quick from that talk that you found is really helpful for people who are on that side of the table, the work, people in the work?
Right. I think that the breathing helps calm you. Right. And so, and like, I love the real deep in breath and then the humming, because that helps with your vagus nerve and that helps release some of that stress and that lets your body understand that, okay, we're gonna move this through our body. I like shaking things out too. You know, I know this is in between clients.
So stop for a second. So yes, I think you're reminding me. So I think that was what we were talking about, like physically everything can, their shoulders wrap around their ears. And when they have back to back, making that time to step out and do that, like that box breathing, right? Where you're taking a breath for four counts, hold for four counts, was that it, or eight?
Right, four. It's like a box. You inhale for four, then you hold for four, then you exhale for four, and then you hold for four. So just think of it as a box that gives your mind something to concentrate on, but also gives your body that oxygenation that it needs. And it just gives you a little break. And you can do that with your eyes open, with your eyes closed. You can do it, you know, in a meeting. No one has to know that you're doing it. You can do it in between clients. One of the things that I like too is just the, you know, the act of, I said, you know, like a doormat, wiping your feet before you enter into the next phase, back to home with your family, or, you know, your personal life of maybe something's going on in your life and you just wipe that off so that you can be present with other people. But it's just really using your mind also to help you compartmentalize it a little bit, you know, to be present. To say, this is where I am now. Everything that I have going on is in the background right now. This presence with this person, this act of listening, this is where I need to be. In between, though, let's take care of me. Some of the things they've told you, you know, one of the ones is just running your hand underwater for 30 seconds and just concentrating. It's called mindfulness, but just concentrating on the temperature of the water. It gives your brain an assignment instead of, oh my gosh, I got to talk to this next family, and then I got to do this, and then I got to do that. And the stress that comes all the time with everything coming at you at once.
Yeah. And it's hard to be your full, wonderful self when you have all that stuff going on in the back. So I kind of jumped back and then over again, but this is so powerful. You're sitting in a room with like 50 funeral professionals that were doing this all at once. We were doing the breathing, the box breathing, we were doing it. And you mentioned about the humming, because when you said like running your hand under cold, like your wrist under cold water, that stimulates your vagus nerve. The humming also does that. And it's interesting, you think, oh, that's nothing. But oh my gosh, it is so powerful. Like that whole.
Three times is all it takes for that humming.
Okay. So let's do it really quick. I think it'd be fun. So let's they know what we're talking about. So tell it, kind of show how to do
what
it.
What we're going
to
do is we're going to inhale real quick and real deep. And then we're going to do a quick inhale and a long exhale. But as we exhale, we're going to hum. And as you hum, that stimulates your vagus nerve. So do you want to do it just once, or you want to do it three times?
Oh, let's just do it once.
Okay.
We're going to do it twice.
Okay. Deep breath
I'll
in.
Follow your lead. Okay.
Exhale.
That's a long way. And then do it one more time. Do it one more time.
Okay.
Go. All right. You know what's weird is you could totally feel almost like a waterfall through your body. And I literally felt my shoulders relaxing. That is so wild. Thank you, Sherry. Like that is something. And you could even make it like a silly thing with your coworkers. You know, you could be like, all right, it's time to hum, everybody. Right. And then you make it so everybody kind of giggles afterwards, like, you know, but again, what a powerful remembrance that just like in an airplane, you put your mask on yourself first before you can take care of other people. And if you're not taking care of yourself as a funeral professional, you can't help your families to your highest self. So I think
just think if you have a family and you have a woman that's just inconsolable, and if you can get her to just do one of these exercises, I mean,
that's
you can actually
idea.
Help her.
Oh my gosh, that's a brilliant idea. Right, by helping them through it that they can take home and continue to do. So when you do check on them, you say, hey, how are those breathing exercises going? Are they working? Like, what a human way to connect with someone by sharing something that'll work and then remembering it. Because everybody, you know, like every time you ask, like, oh, how's your dog Fido or whatever? You remembered his name. Thank you so much. Like that, it goes so long. And that's where the human part comes into, right, Sherry? Like remembering those little details that makes people feel like you really did hear them.
Right. People want to see, they want to feel seen, heard, valued, understood, and validated.
Ooh, say that again, please.
They want to, be what? Seen, heard, valued, understood, and validated.
I love that. It's so true. Yeah. And that's what a true friend does, right? Like that's somebody who you know are your people when they can do all those things for you. Mm, I love that. Okay. So the fast fix. Oh, wait, rapid fire. So I'm going to ask you a few sentences and I just need you to answer right off the top of your head. All right. This will be fun. You're a TV journalist, so this will be easy for you. Okay. The most powerful words a funeral director can say are,
I'm here for you.
Perfect. One phrase every funeral home should retire is? We shouldn't say anymore.
It shouldn't say anymore.
Thanks, come again.
Yeah. it just give it some time.
Ooh, that's good. That's good. Okay. By the way, I just went fuzzy, so hopefully we'll go back to being clear. Whoa. The magic of TV. Okay. Ooh, that was really good. Stop saying that. Just give it some time. Yeah. That's so rude. Or they've gone to a better place, even though we know or that we are going to heaven. You don't need to hear that in the moment. Really? You know, anyways, next phrase, authenticity sounds like
love.
Oh, that's good. The future of funeral home communication is
wide open.
Nice. And the best marketing message is?
We're here for you now and in the future.
All right. Very cool. Because inevitably, we all will need their help, sadly. Mm-hmm. It's so true. So last thing. If a funeral home wanted to strengthen trust with their community this week without spending a dollar, what's the first communication you'd encourage them to improve?
Oh, yeah. Human connection, you know, face-to-face communication.
I love it. Yeah. It's that
personal touch.
One-on-one. Mm-hmm. Personal touch. I love that. So before we wrap up, I asked a guest on the Death Care Marketing Show this question. If you could leave every funeral home owner with one piece of wisdom, and we've shared a lot today, by the way, seriously, I'm so grateful for all your wisdom, your experience, what you've poured into your book that people can take and use every day. It's amazing. But what's one lesson that you've learned that could help them serve families better, build trust, or grow their business? One piece of wisdom, what would it be?
When you show people that you truly care, it means everything and could be the best marketing strategy that you have.
I love it. I love today's conversation because it really does remind us that it isn't just about getting people to notice your funeral home, but it's giving them a reason to trust it. The way your funeral home communicates becomes the way your community remembers you, right? Every conversation, every email, every social media post, every presentation, every interaction, they're all telling your story. And the most trusted funeral homes aren't the ones with the perfect script. They're the ones that sound like real people, because we need to remember that people don't connect with polished. They connect with genuine. So if you're a funeral home owner and if this helped, please share it with another funeral home owner who needs it, because let's look to what works and drop what doesn't. And we'll see you next time on the Death Care Marketing Show. Thank you so much, Sherry, for being my guest.
Thank you,
Mary. And have a wonderful day. You're welcome. All right. See you guys next time. Bye.